Hello and welcome to the podcast Sensory Success Stories, a podcast by the European Sensory Network, ESN. In it, we will talk about recent trends, challenging questions, and surprising results in the area of sensory and consumer science. I'm your host, Fabienne Hübener. My guest today is Katrin Ola. She's the head of perception and cognitive neuroscience at the Science and Research Department at DSM Firmenich. And today we want to talk about a sophisticated method to create fragrances that can enhance focus and concentration. Katrin Ola, welcome to the ESN podcast. And please, could you introduce yourself?
So I'm a psychologist by trainings. So psychology and cognitive neuroscience, you would call it today. So I worked many years in an academic research environment until I joined DSM Firmenich 2 years ago as the head of perception and cognitive neuroscience in the science and research department. And here I'm using my knowledge and experience on fragrance and smell and taste perception that I have gathered in the probably 2 decades before at the more academic research institutions, where my focus has always been on the chemical senses and understanding what really happens in the brain, what drives liking, what drives acceptance of novel food, of fragrances, etc.
You and your colleagues, you came up with a method to create fragrances that can enhance focus and mental performance. First of all, why were you or DSM Firmenich interested in developing such a method?
So actually, this is based on consumer needs. So our marketing research and consumer surveys have shown that half of the consumers that were interviewed actually reported having a hard time to focus and concentrate. So that to a point they even said that this is giving them anxiety and causing them stress. And at the same time, the majority of consumers said that they actually believe that a fragrance could really help them improve their focus. So that was a very real consumer need that we discovered here, or that our colleagues discovered here. And our aim was then to provide a science-based solution that actually is also relevant for as many product categories as possible to give them the most benefit possible. That was our starting point.
Why did you want to do it in a scientific way? I mean, I'm sure there are aromatherapists, many people who already use certain fragrances and odors to help with concentration and focus. I'm sure they could come up with 10 odors in a second. So why did you want to follow this scientifically?
So that's really a signature of DSM Firmenich, to not just use a fragrance and claim that it's beneficial, but to really provide scientific evidence for its workings, for its effects. So we take great pride into this. So it takes a lot of money, a lot of work, but that makes our products also special, and I hope our clients can appreciate that.
And we had a little talk before, and in this talk you mentioned that you actually at the beginning were quite skeptical. Why?
I was indeed. Because I worked on a large project on mental enhancement before, and in this interdisciplinary project, we examined the effects of very different interventions to see whether they can improve mental faculties. And we looked at aspects of nutrition, pharmaceutical interventions like modafinil, meditation, and also memory trainings. And my task was to examine the nutritional aspects. So I did I did studies with sugar and caffeine, placebo-controlled studies, and surprisingly, we found no effects. We had participants perform tasks over hours, like really mimicking and a complex exam situation, and we found just no effects. And that was really surprising, almost shocking, because I thought caffeine and sugar must have effects at different time scales, though. But we really found nothing, and we could replicate that in three studies. So that was very disappointing. And I thought, well, if caffeine and sugar don't do the job, and some of the pharmaceuticals also didn't in these other studies, I was like, can a fragrance really be more effective than that? Mm-hmm. So, but that turned actually out to be a very good starting point, because I was the most critical person on the project, mm-hmm. and convincing me took a lot. And I'm very convinced of the effects that we found in our studies.
So maybe now you could tell us a little bit about the studies you conducted. How many people did you include? What was the study design? And then at the end, what were the results?
First of all, we try to think about how to measure focus, right? So focus is a very wide concept. It's not exactly scientifically defined. So we ask consumers again what they expect. They gave us some feedback, and we dug into the literature, and we identified this troop task as a very suitable task because it measures a range of different cognitive faculties, like the ability to ignore interference and irrelevant information, really selective attention. And we added also a second task. It's an arithmetic task where people had to do simple and more difficult calculations under time pressure to add a measure of quantitative reasoning. So we thought these tasks would take a relatively short amount of time to be conducted and capture actually a broad range of cognitive aspects that could be really summarized under mental focus. Mm-hmm. And so we took these tasks and we combined them with our proprietary SendMove tool, which is a questionnaire that captures emotional experiences associated with fragrances and some additional metacognitive ratings where we ask people how they actually think they did and how they felt. And we combined these tasks together in three different conditions. So we had a special fragrance that was designed to elicit focus. And we had participants perform the tasks in a booth that was fragranced with this fragrance, like through an air freshener mm-hmm. device. And we had a control condition where there was no fragrance in the room. And a third condition where we had a fragrance that was equally pleasant, but it was not meeting our criteria to enhance focus from a fragrance design point of view.
Mm-hmm. One question, how do you ensure that the booth is fragrance-free? Because aren't there always fragrances? I mean, the body odor of the participants, the plastic, whatever.
Yes. So such fragrances of the environment and the person itself, we couldn't really rule out. So, but compared, since we had three separate booths, so the difference was really, really clear and perceivable. And one would think that the individual body lotion scent or the individual's body odor is really something that you're already adapted to and that doesn't play a role in that very moment. So it's a constant more or less throughout the day. that doesn't play a key role here.
And the intensity of the odors, they were above threshold. I assume they were not subconscious.
Exactly. So the fragrances were noticeable, but participants were not informed that there would be different fragrances. Mm-hmm. So they were asked to do the task three times, and we assigned a balanced order, right? One person started with the focus fragrance, one with no fragrance, etc. And they were not made aware of that that is a study that has anything to do with fragrances. Mm-hmm. And only after they completed the three tasks, we actually presented the fragrances again to have them be evaluated. We asked whether they noticed something during the study. Mm-hmm. So, and they did notice the fragrances, but they thought they had nothing to do with the tasks that they were performing. That mm-hmm. was very important to us, because if we had primed them that they would smell different fragrances, they would have paid attention to them, and it may have influenced at least their judgments. Unlikely their performance in the tasks, though, because these tasks are performed under time pressure, and it's almost impossible to consciously influence the results in such tasks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you take care that they would not adapt to the odor, or you just did let it happen like in normal real life?
The latter. So we actually wanted to mimic a realistic situation. So we took no special measures to prevent adaptation in these situations. So there likely was some. But nevertheless, we had very positive effects. So these did not really impair the performance.
Mm-hmm.
And we did these studies three times, actually. So we replicated them also with different fragrances. And overall, we had 144 participants enrolled here.
Mm-hmm. And you did that in Switzerland at the company, or?
We did it externally in Italy with Italian consumers.
Okay. How come? Was there a reason behind it?
We typically find partners that have optimal lab space to conduct the studies as we need them. And then we plan it with them in detail.
And before we come to the results, just maybe for some listeners, it would be interesting to know exactly what is a Stroop test. I know every psychology student needs to learn that, but maybe it has been a long time. So what do you have to do in the Stroop test?
So in this Stroop task, which is named after the researcher who actually designed this task, you will see colored words written on a computer screen, and it's colored terms. So you could see the word red written in red font, or you could see the word yellow in yellow font, or you could see it in different font colors. So red written in yellow, for example. And the task, so from the colors, you can see that they may match the meaning or maybe a mismatch to the meaning. And the task of participants is to press a button that indicates either the color that is meant by the word or the color that is printed on the screen. In our version, we used the task where they had to say the color that was printed on the screen. So they had differently colored buttons they could press. And so we can measure how fast and how accurately they can perform this task. It's actually quite difficult. It sounds very simple, but when you see red in yellow or green in blue, it really causes interference, and it takes a moment longer to respond to it. And that is also what this Stroop effect really is. So that it takes you longer and you make more mistakes and this situations where colors and meaning don't match. So it's really a task that requires all of the focus and concentration you have. And within a few minutes, you have already a very good measure of that.
I actually did it because you were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, and I really wanted to know how difficult it is. It's extremely difficult. It's sort of fun also because you think you would do better, but you get so confused. And I could totally see that this is some kind of measure of your focus and how you can shift your attention.
Yes, and this is also why I think it is such a well-examined and well-described paradigm, as we call it in psychology. So we have a good understanding what cognitive faculties you need to do well in this task. And the effects are just very well described and easily reproducible.
And the other test, the quantitative reasoning task, what did the participants have to do in this task?
So this was like a calculation task. So it could be something like 17 plus 34. And then participants had to use the number keys to type in the result of this calculation. So that causes a little bit more variability in results also, because it's also how fast are people actually finding the right number keys besides doing the calculations accurately. And it's not a very standardized task, but we thought it's a task that is actually quite relevant to us sometimes. You know, we always need to do some quick calculations. And yes, and here we also measured the speed by which participants answered and how accurate they did these calculations.
So let's get to the results. What were the outcomes of these experiments?
So simply put, we could show that the focus fragrance improved focus and concentration. And in terms of exact measurements, it meant that we found that people were faster in responding to the Stroop task and also to difficult mathematical computations. And they did not make more errors. This is really important because sometimes you can be faster, but you're doing it more sloppily, causing more errors. And in one of our replications, we also found that people were more accurate on some trials and instances, and that happened without slowing down. So it's really this speed in reaction times, this speed up and or better accuracy in the tasks. And both really indicate an improvement in mental processing efficiency, you could summarize it as.
And it was significant also between the odors and odors compared to a no odor situation.
Exactly. So the effects were significant compared to the situation where participants had no room fragrance and compared to the situation where they had the other also pleasant fragrance that was created to not enhance focus, though. So always compared to the two controls.
And were there also participants who did worse when they were in the odor situation?
So I remember definitely some variability in the data, but I also remember that we tried to cluster participants and that wasn't really successful. So on average, we had a quite strong enhancement. And that could mean that one or two people really didn't show the effect. That's always the case. But at the group level, it was a very strong effect.
And would you also say that this is a sort of clinically meaningful effect, or is this just statistically significant, but in everyday life, it wouldn't matter?
That is a tough question,
Mm.
right? I would say clinically relevant effects also require proper clinical studies, clinical trials, which we did not aim to do. So we tested average consumers that had presumably normal mental capacities. Although I would really like it to be applicable also to those who need a boost in cognitive performance, when we think of people with dementia who start really losing their focus or memorability aspects. We know from other interventions like medications, pharmaceutical interventions, that the diseased brain, the not average healthy brain, works quite differently. And I would not want to generalize or recommend even to use these fragrances to improve focus in those who have mental deficits. That doesn't mean that if people like the fragrance, they shouldn't use it. I just want to be very clear that one should not toy with their hopes and with their despair, and promising a positive effect in clinical populations would simply be unethical.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we do.
Okay, that would probably be an interesting experiment to do in the future.
Absolutely. And who knows, you know, if this isn't also starting a line of research that will be picked up in clinical trials in the future.
Mm-hmm. At DSM Firmenich, the fragrances that are created with this new method are called Emoticode Focus Fragrances. So I think there will be more fragrances that are coming out of this line. And I read in a press release that there are three steps necessary. Identify. I mean, first you have to know which scent connects to a certain emotion. Create. Then you need a set of design rules to create these fragrances. And then to certify, this is basically the experiment, I guess, that you just explained, that you really can show experimentally that this certain fragrance induces a certain emotions. Could you tell us a little bit more about the whole process? It sounds like a pretty huge thing to do for just maybe one or two or three fragrances to bring out on the market.
It is indeed a pretty huge process that requires a lot of data that we have gathered over years.
Mm-hmm.
So in this first step, identify, one of the bases is our proprietary scent move emotional tool. And based on this questionnaire tool, our consumer insights team has identified which emotions are even relevant and playing into focus, because focus isn't really an emotion, right, that we assess with that tool. And in the create phase, we used our data scientists in the D-Lab used a huge database that we have, where we have consumer data from almost 2 million consumer interviews across 51 countries, and 34,000 fragrances were evaluated here. And they leveraged this database to actually come up with a predictive model of which fragrance properties or combinations would lead to increased focus. And that recommendation took us to the third step. And this is where my team was contributing, or that was our assignment, to take the focus designed fragrance where we had nothing to do in the design and to actually test whether it would improve focus in proper scientific studies. And this is what we did. And we tested not only one, but we tested five of these focus fragrances against non-focus controls. And yeah. The results I mentioned already.
So you found these results for all five fragrances?
Yes, we did. Uh-huh. The magnitude of the effect varied, right? Participants also varied. It was three different studies. So you have some variability, but this overwhelming consensus across the fragrances, that was really convincing me.
Mm-hmm. I guess you cannot really name the fragrances. Is there any hint you can give us? Like, is it more from a food, non-food, citrus, fruit, or any kind of fragrance family? Or is that a total secret?
I mean, from the data treasure that I just mentioned that led to these rules, you can imagine that these are extremely valuable to us. Mm-hmm. So I cannot disclose them. But what I can tell you is that they are quite variable. So they are not just flowery smells mm-hmm. or powdery or fruity smells. Mm-hmm. So we have different smell categories, different olfactive families that could very well be a focus enhancing fragrance. What they are exactly, that's our secret.
Okay. Also, I will, in the show notes for this podcast, I will put a link to a video with Christelle Pocheron, also from DSM Firmenich. She did work with a scent move and she talks about it in another video. And she also just gave a talk at Pangborn, and what was pretty impressive and I think not new to many people in the field is that there are differences depending on the culture you come from. So would you say that the results you found with Italian people, you could generalize to everybody in the world, or do you have to be careful?
So cultural differences are an important aspect that is also really important to us. So we see differences in many categories for many fragrances. And if you remember what I just said, where we had almost 2 million consumers from 51 countries providing the original data that led to the rules. So cultural differences are really relevant to us and we appreciate them. But given that the initial data that led to these design rules was gathered across 51 countries, I'm feeling pretty confident that the resulting fragrances will have relatively universal effects. That said, the validation studies we really did in Europe, though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that for using these fragrances or this method to find fragrances to enhance cognitive capabilities in people with dementia or other brain diseases, it could be difficult and should be really addressed in different experiments. But what would you say with people who are neurodiverse, so-called, who have ADHD or who are just ticking a little bit different? Could this also be possible to help them with these kind of focus fragrances?
To be honest, we couldn't tell from our mm-hmm. data, but as for any patient or neurodiverse population, I would say if they want to use a fragrance to increase well-being, there's definitely no harm in that, but we would not want to make a promise or a claim that this could really help them improve their conditions. This is really an assignment for a proper clinical study. Mm-hmm.
And with the odors you tested, did you always find that these odors that enhance focus need to be odors that the person likes? Or could that also be some odor that you actually don't like to smell?
So we didn't vary it or modify liking systematically. But I would predict that if you really dislike a fragrance, then this would not have a beneficial effect simply because this cat. So I would say that if you dislike a fragrance, that would probably not be beneficial simply because it would grab your attention away from the task you're supposed to do. But as said, we haven't tested it systematically. It's just something that I would conclude based on what we know. And one important aspect to consider here is that while the liking or appreciation of the fragrance is probably helping, it is not sufficient. Mm-hmm. Since we had this control fragrance that was also liked and pleasant, but it wasn't following the design rules, so it didn't have a positive cognitive benefit. So liking alone is not enough.
Mm-hmm. Now, recently, the two studies came out that go in a similar direction. One was done by the University of California and published recently, and they claimed that a fragrance that was released during the night could enhance cognitive abilities. I think it was like plus 200%. There was a lot of debate about the study, yes. But I don't know if you have read it, but isn't that easy to test?
Well, in this study, they didn't just do an overnight test. They tested 6 months later, mm-hmm. Which I think is one part of the criticism in this study, because a lot of things can happen in 6 months, and these aspects weren't controlled for. Also, the initial sample size that was estimated wasn't reached even close. And I would say also some scientific rigor was really missing from the analysis, because they actually showed also negative effects on some trials, but they focused in their interpretation on those trials where they had a positive effect. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly worth criticizing, but in principle, the study idea was quite interesting, to use overnight fragrance exposure to improve cognition. And I wouldn't see why one shouldn't study this systematically. Mm-hmm. We took a different approach. We really used the fragrance during the time when focus was needed, but it would be very interesting to see if one could have enduring effects by regular exposure while you sleep and don't even consciously perceive the odors.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a study by Thomas Hummel and his group. Just came out about using smell training. I know you have worked too with smell training, and plus video visual input, so turn it into multisensory training, and this also enhanced cognition. So this would be another approach. How you tested it was a sort of a passive approach where people just happen to smell something. So what do you think, how could smell training or multisensory training affect cognition?
So smell training has been shown to improve smell perception at different levels. So different studies find different aspects, like the ability to discriminate or name fragrances or to detect them, like in a sensitivity kind of way. But what they all have in common is the task or the requirement during the training, and that is to focus on a fragrance, to concentrate fully on that, and to do this in a regular manner. And that is something that we typically don't do unless we are perfumers, mm-hmm. In our everyday life. So what this task does is actually directing attention to our nose, that we tend to ignore otherwise, because other sensory inputs, particularly from the eyes and also the ears, are just so much more salient. So we are very visually driven, because what we see is overwhelming, so that we often don't pay attention to our nose and also to our tongue. So this training can improve attention to the sense of smell and orienting toward the sense of smell, and really improve neuronal connectivity, as some people have shown in this area. And that in the end may affect also other cognitive functions.
Actually, what just came to my mind, did anybody ever realize an olfactory Stroop test? Maybe you smell orange and then you have to read the word banana or something. That would be interesting.
That is indeed very interesting. I don't know if anybody thought about this, but I love the idea.
Okay. I think by now many listeners would love to test the focus fragrances. Is there actually already a product on the market, or is it still in development? I think there's a patent pending. So how could I get my hands on a fragrance that uses this method?
So as you know, DSM Firmenich is B2B. That means we sell to other companies that then use our fragrances to create their products. And I know there have been the first adoptions for the focus fragrances. So there should be products out there which we may recognize by specific claims that they boost mental performance, that they help focus, etc. Although I cannot tell you when they would be available in the market.
So if anybody from one of those companies is listening to the podcast and you have a product out there, please send a mail to ESN. and do you yourself actually use fragrances at your office or at home to concentrate?
Well, I have been using fragrances to influence my mood long before I became a researcher, not knowing why I would do this, simply because it felt good. But now, since we did the focus study, you can believe that the focus fragrances became a big hit in our office. And whenever we feel mentally exhausted, one of us is getting the flask with the focus fragrance.
Nice. I would like a flask like that too. So my last question is looking a little bit in the future of this idea, of this method. And could you actually see in the future maybe that these kind of fragrances are developed, for example, to diminish aggression, foster intercultural understanding, boost creativity? Do you have any plans maybe to go in that direction? I think it would be interesting for maybe for elderly homes to calm people down, or for creative endeavors to enhance creativity.
Yes, absolutely. So given that we have this huge database, which we constantly interrogate and also build new models for different benefits, there will be new beneficial fragrances in the future. The question on which benefit we are tackling next is largely driven by consumer research that we do. So we really ask, like, what are the trends? What are the needs? What do consumers miss? What isn't available in the market already? And then we make a decision on what's the next benefit to research.
Katrin Olaf, thank you very much. You answered all the questions from the long list.
Yeah, and thank you for taking your time today for the podcast. And I hope to see you and talk to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. This podcast was brought to you by the European Sensory Network in 2023. The intro music was by Jackie Brown and is licensed under the Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. And you can listen to more of his music on freemusicarchive.org.